Oh. Samuel John Lightning Hopkins of Centerville, Texas, with "It's a Sin to Be Rich, It's a Low-Down Shame to Be Poor." This man is regarded in the rock world as the greatest guitarist and blues man of all time, and he influenced rock and rock and roll in America. He was a blues and country singer, songwriter, and guitarist par excellence in his own way. But I liked the songs he sang, which were straight from the heart and directly the truth. So I thought I'd treat you to a little Lightnin' Hopkins today. He died on January the 30th, 1982, at the age of 69 from cancer. And again, viewed as the greatest single influence on rock guitar players today. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and good to be with you again. We are going to pick up from where we left off yesterday, especially since we have witnessed, some of you might have tuned in, actually. I couldn't stay for the whole thing. I got too angry. This face-off that the media have been stoking between Biden and Vladimir Putin in Geneva. And a lot of discussion about it, a lot of analysis, and a lot that made me angry. You know, it's amazing how hypocritical America is and how easy it is to blow the lid off. In all of this discussion, it was a mostly all-white affair. The only brains we have in America belong to white people, it seems. They're the only ones who know what's happening. They're the only ones we should turn to find out what the big news really is, because they're the only ones who know. I watched for as long as I could stand it, and one black person showed up at the round table, Eugene Robinson from the Washington Post. He wasn't there for long, but he was there literally, it seemed, for color. And that is how the media, without having to say a word, it tells you the state of affairs in America. Who controls information, knowledge of what is going on, who has the expertise, who's accepted as an expert on anything. Poor Eugene Robinson was there by himself, and they're talking about the biggest story today around the world is this so-called face-off between Biden and Putin. Now, that is a story in and of itself, because that was supposed to have been corrected decades ago. The media was supposed to be integrated by now, but they're not letting go. They're in charge of what we see, hear, and read in the way of information. And they are the authorities. They know everything there is to know. Nobody else knows anything. Very fascinating. But we are going to do our follow-up from yesterday, and it coincides with what went on today in terms of who controls information in this country, in this world practically, but certainly in the United States of America, despite all the civil rights acts and all the affirmative action plans and programs and whatnot. It comes down to this: nothing important, nothing important is addressed unless it's from an all-white perspective. And it's not that they are particularly knowledgeable, especially knowledgeable. The people I watched today, any reasonably educated person who reads newspapers regularly could have offered the same thing. But I did find a bit of humor, and the humor came from Hillary Clinton. I mean, really going at it about standards and whatnot. Yes, the same Hillary Clinton who's married to, what's his name again? Yes, Bill. The president with the highest moral standards in the history of the United States. That one. They're beating up on Putin. Not that he doesn't deserve it. But it was not analysis. I'm looking for analysis. It was a slugfest. Nobody had anything analytical to say, really. It was invective. And it was clear the mission was to destroy Vladimir Putin. Now, he may very well deserve a trouncing, but you see, they're presenting this as information and analysis and sober thinking, but it was all downhill. It was all, let's beat up Vladimir Putin, let's, you know, as they say, let's big up Joe Biden, and we would have done our job. It was a pathetic display of what Americans call journalism. In any event, I want to return to our discussion yesterday, because we were talking yesterday about something very important along these lines. And we were basically discussing how do you interpret America right now in the scheme of things as a leading nation of the world and also as a, how could I say it, a leading nation among nations, in a community of nations. How are you reacting to your country? What is it representing to you? And we got some very sober points yesterday. I must say I'm very proud of the effort that callers and listeners are making to contribute to our aggregate intelligence about things. It means that you're paying attention. It means that you're following the news. It means that you are you polishing up your act too. It means that you are seeing yourself in a position that I think we all should strive to be, which is a conduit, a reliable, sober conduit for information that we can share with others. And again, as I say all the time, don't be concerned with whether people agree or disagree. Be more concerned that you're doing a very good job of presenting an issue and presenting facts that buttress your position on that issue. And let people react the way they feel or they believe you deserve to be reacted to that way. But it is not important. Don't feel intimidated about whether people agree with you or disagree with you. That's not the objective here. The objective is to develop your skills at presentation, at debate, at making cogent points within the time frame that you have, that you're making sense, that we can tell that you have read some material and integrated it seamlessly in your presentation. Okay, so we had titled it The State of the Nation and our open forum. And again, we are addressing the question of how do we interpret or analyze this nation, a leading nation of the world, and also in the context of a nation within the world community of nations. Where, in your view, do you situate the United States? And give us an idea of why you take the position that you do. All right. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. 888-874-4888. Let's see where you're going today, especially if you've had some chance to think about this. They've been pushing it as a kind of a gladiator war, you know, Biden versus Putin. And, of course, America should triumph. Biden should destroy Putin. And that's how the media in the United States generally have interpreted this meeting that had been arranged so that they can discuss matters of mutual interest and importance. How do you see the United States as a leading nation? And how do you see the United States within the context of the nations of the world? Jeremiah from Harlem, you start us off today.
Good afternoon, Eutrice.
Good afternoon.
I would evaluate the United States as very low and as on the decline. And I think there's a lot of metrics that would indicate that. I can't say I'm offhand familiar with, you know, UN indices and that kind of thing. But, I mean, our educational standards have been declining for a long time. Real wages have been declining for a long time. We're the only country in the world that doesn't have, or in the industrialized world, the so-called first world, that doesn't have universal health care. I mean, I myself have been a medical tourist in the so-called second world. Actually in the country of Belarus, and which has been in the newspapers a little bit recently, although probably not enough. But by many measures, we're really not a very civilized society. And having traveled a fair amount in my life, having been to, I don't know, you know, maybe 30 different countries in my lifetime, I could say that there's a lot of things in this country that are really not to be desired, and in a lot of ways getting worse. I mean, if I look at my own neighborhood here in Harlem, for example, it's an increasingly dangerous neighborhood. There's just a lot of wild behavior on the streets at nighttime. It's a community that, you know, it's run. I don't want to say it's run, but it's largely run by delinquents, basically, Like, there's no notion of community or decency or respecting one's elders or respecting the children, the community. I mean, you know, there's just a lot of indications of social decay in my immediate vicinity. I mean, I would just have to walk down the block. And in fact, I take photos sometimes of, you know, there's all the people who lay down on the streets, and I don't mean to, you know, disrespect them as human beings, but just as a documentation of just like the condition of people. And every day I see people just laying right in the middle of the streets like they're ready to die. So, you know, I think there's a lot of pressure that's come about as a result of the lockdown and the, you know, the various degrees of lockdown that have been imposed in the cities around the country. A lot of people have lost their work. A lot of small businesses are closed or on the verge of closing. A lot of people are facing eviction and foreclosure. And it's a high pressure situation, and the pressure is increasing. And you know, I'm scared to see what's going to push things over the edge in one respect or another. It just strikes me as a very unstable situation. And I've never found myself more interested in moving, frankly. I mean, I'm, you know, my wife is Belarusian, and that's not a very stable place to live right now either. We're concerned about our family over there. And then it just raises the question, well, where is there a safe place to live in the world? Like, where you could just kind of walk down the street and not be at risk of random violence.
In light of the direct experience that you have had and continue to have, how do you interpret this summit meeting between Biden and Putin and the U.S. media's reaction of what they think is important?
Well, you know, I haven't seen much media coverage of it, and hopefully I'll get a chance to delve into that a little bit. But I can tell you firsthand that in the Slavic countries, I mean, I can't speak for all of the Slavic countries. I can speak for Belarus and what I've seen from Putin himself. They mock the way we've turned them into a boogeyman. Putin made a comment to the effect of saying, you know, the way they're blaming us for everything. It's sort of the way people chose in history to demonize the Jews. And he basically said, look, we have our own affairs to manage. You know, I wish we had the power to simply, you know, control presidential elections and all this kind of thing. But, you know, we have our own affairs, and it's rather amusing, basically, was the tone that I've seen from Putin. So I just find Putin to be, while I'm sure he's quite a brutal man in many respects, and I don't know the full history of his brutality or even, you know, the scope of it, I do find him to be a much more professional politician than what we experience here, which isn't necessarily a good thing, but he's much more, he practices more of what they call the sang-froid. He's not involved in the kind of shenanigans that you would see in our American political system. I mean, the man is a judo black belt. He's a former head of the KGB. He's, you know, he comes from hardcore, like, intelligence, military intelligence kind of background. And he views the world in a power concept. So,
do you have a feeling that the United States is progressing in the eyes of Americans first, or even people outside of America, progressing in their esteem, taking a larger and larger place in their hearts? Do you find that that's in fact happening?
You know, I don't really think so, honestly. I mean, I think Americans have always had just sort of a weird identity in the world in different ways. We're sort of loved and hated, you know, in various ways, and rightfully so, and for, you know, in both cases. But I think the real concern are the real economic and political concerns that are going to unfold, like how we are being perceived is less important, I would say, because people have all variety of perceptions. And, you know, they'll continue listening to American popular music and watching, you know, our popular movies as long as we can produce this kind of thing. But, you know, at the same time, that's not going to translate into real world economics for people in the cities and towns around the country. Well, I do believe crime is going up nationally. And, you know, there's the issue of mental health and the sort of just the mental health environment of the United States, which, you know, I don't know what it is, the video games, the violence in the movies, you know, I don't know what's the difference between our culture and other cultures, that we have so much murder with guns, for example. But, you know, those situations don't promise to get any better based on the lack of policies, increased economic instability. And people always love to say, oh, well, you know, why aren't these people getting mental health treatment? Well, are you going to volunteer for the mental health ward to work over there? You know, those are very special people who work with the psychologically damaged and even potentially dangerous people in some cases. Like, that's very special work, and that would require a lot of investment in, you know, not just economic investment, but an investment in people, you know, in human beings to take that much care for other human beings. You know, it's like we look at these situations with the police, and we see how many situations of the police being put in the capacity of mental health agents, which they are not at all qualified to do.
Well, thank you for getting us started today, Jeremiah. I very much appreciate your input today. Ernie from New York, you're on the air.
Hello, Eutrice.
What is your What is your feeling about your country at the moment? And not only in terms of how Americans might feel, you being one of them, but how do you think the world is reacting or has been reacting to the United States within the community of nations?
Well, I think there's a lot of backlash happening throughout the world. You know, if you step out of the U.S. media and you look at or read other newspapers and other medias of information, you will get a different sense of it. I was scanning through the news yesterday. I haven't done it in a while. And I did, yes, you corrected. First headline was the meeting, the G7 meeting, which I think is happening today, between Putin and Biden, and it's going to be closed door, I believe, right? It's not going to be accessible to the media. So there will be comments. And already I could see where, like you said, they are treating Putin like he's the criminal, he's a murderer, et cetera. And they're approaching it from that point, even though Putin it appears to be, he's a smart gentleman, he's a smart leader, just like the gentleman said before, and he's not going to be pushed around. That's period. He's not going to be pushed around. He already actually invited Putin. I mean, Biden. Putin invited Biden back, I think, when he called him a devil or something like that, sometimes back. Biden, the president, called him some name, and he wanted to challenge him in a debate. And it never happened. But what I wanted to mention was that as I was looking through the news, the second line, and this is I go look at Google News and see what's trending. You know, what's like, it's just a trending thing. Google News is not the news, but it gives you an idea of what people are looking at or reading. So the second news article was, I think, what's happening in the Palestine over there in the Middle East, where Israel, yes, with the new administration, they already bombed some targets yesterday, I think it was, or late the day before. And the reason why they bombed these targets, I think it was the Hamas targets, mostly in Palestine, is because of some incendiary balloons that were sent over to Israel. Now, I said incendiary balloons. I mean, gosh, do they have the technology for that? So as I'm scanning through, I noticed that these incendiary balloons are actually regular balloons. They took a picture of a guy, supposedly he was leaving the area where he sent these balloons up. That's an evidence. And these are just regular balloons with something attached to it. But in retaliation to that, they actually send huge bombs into certain areas of a densely populated place. Now,
but I want to get back to the subject, the subject at hand. You're now putting us in Israel and Palestine. I want to talk about Putin and Biden.
And well, I would rather wait because I would like to see what the comments are after this meeting and then look at what was actually discussed during the meeting. We don't know what's going to happen. I mean, what the results, I don't know if it's out already, if any, but yeah, this is the main thing that's out there. They're going to have a meeting. They're going to be talking things. It's going to be closed door. The media is telling you what they think is going to be discussed, or actually they're telling you what Biden should put up front. See? But
it's not really a closed door. I mean, it may be literally a closed door, but believe me, members of the media have been prepped by their respective news organizations they work for about what it is they ought to be making points about once they are on air. Make no mistake about it. They're not being freely analytical. They have a purpose, and their purpose is to follow the line, support Biden, i.e. the United States, against Putin. Now, this is not to say that Putin is without blame or without criticism or anything like that. It is just that it is happening blatantly, and they're calling it analysis, and they're calling it, you know, we're just taking a closer look, but it's not. It's awful. And as I said, I was surprised that I found Eugene Robinson as the only Black person, and he was there for just a short time at the round table of discussion. The media looked exactly the way it looked, or you expected it to look, in the 1950s. Yeah. It's an all-white affair. They're not taking chances at all of any other voices having anything to contribute at all. Thanks, Ernie, for contributing today.
Thank you, Richard. Bye now. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Brother David from Brooklyn, you're on the air. What is your
Yes, good afternoon, Eutrice. I'm going to get going from where you started off. You talked about journalism. I think that a lot of the people who are involved in newspapers are not really involved in real journalism. The mass of the newspapers, I'd say, and other means of that are involved in journalism, electronic and so forth, are owned by those people in the ruling class. So as far as I'm concerned, those people who are reporters or pretending to be journalists have to be in harmony with what the goal of the ruling class is that owns those newspapers where they get their paychecks. So there are very few really independent journalists around, and that's why we get the reports we get. Now, as moving along with the topic for today, I think it's very interesting that people, they don't understand this is one big game. And those who rule in this country and maintain imperialism and exploit people all over the world and get involved in wars all over and kill people and do things. Those who get the half of the federal budget for warfare every year or more with the intelligence groups must have enemies. So there's a lot of information on that. In other words, to maintain the system that we have, that's my analysis, you have to have people made, get them scared, and that is a justification for having this massive so-called, quote-unquote, defense budget, which is really a war budget that goes to contractors and personnel and so forth, and maintain an empire and keeping all these smaller countries in check. So you have to get the people here to the point where they're afraid of these other people, these enemies, and that will keep up your ability to maintain this massive so-called defense budget that is really a war budget. And at the same time, the things that the people need, like health care, education, infrastructure, and all kinds of developments that benefit the masses of population, you put that secondary. That's why the United States doesn't have some of the social benefits that you would have in some other, even capitalist countries. So that is the game. The game is you have to have enemies and keep those enemies in the forefront, and that enables you to control the people, make them afraid, and at the same time, fill the pockets of the ruling class that really runs the country. That's the way I look at it.
I think you have quite a handle on it, because the question becomes, the United States for a long time adopted the position that it is unquestionably powerful in the world. It needs nobody. In fact, it dominates the world. And little by little, some countries began to assert themselves as well, because it's the world. It's not your own private it's not your own private sphere. It's the world.
Amen.
And then came to the idea that there's a need to enforce the view, enforce the notion that the United States is at the summit. It's at the peak. Everybody has to toe the line as it suits the United States.
Yes.
But we have others who have disagreed with that and went their own way. Now we're seeing with Biden an attempt to reassert, although he's being a little bit smoother, but it is very clear that that's the intention, to return the United States. That is, if you even think that it left that position, to return it to the world leader, and it calls the shots.
Yes, and that's why the situation right now is to make the Russian government the prime enemy, and also the Chinese, which are somewhat empires themselves. So those are the enemies, the designated enemies. And this is about keeping all the other countries in line. And anybody right. gets out of line, in comes the CIA, in comes the sanctions, in comes the person who lets them know that they're out of line. And if you're out of line, you got a coup d'etat, you got a sanction, you got a situation like Venezuela, Cuba, or Libya. So this is a matter of contending with the other possibilities of massive countries that are considered somewhat strong, such as the Soviets and the Chinese. And so we're seeing in the paper all this so-called competition between Putin and Biden and the name calling and whatnot. So they want to keep people's attention on that. And they want to continue to make the American empire look like it's contending with the Russian and Chinese empire. But you see, you can't go to war with Russia or China. They have nuclear capabilities, and you couldn't win. So you have to have some excitement with these stories about calling Putin names and so forth. And while you're doing the same thing he does with certain enemies. So it's a big game that's going on, and people have to know that the media, to a large extent, work for the government. You know, the newspapers, much of the newspapers could be the public relations or propaganda section of the government, you know, the New York Times. And we know that many reporters are on the payroll of intelligence organizations and whatnot. So it's a big game that's being played, and the people are losing.
I agree. Thank you. Good to hear from you, David. Good to hear from you.
Thank you.
We'll take a break as we come back and finish up right after that. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. We'll return right after the short break. He doesn't want to be rich. He just wants to be between rich and poor. I love that. Ed from Queens, you're on the air at 888-874-4888.
Good afternoon, Eutrice. How are you?
Okay, Ed. How are you doing?
You know me. My thumbs were here. Still hanging.
Your thumbs have been serving you well these last few years, allowing you to hang in there.
Yes, they have. Yes, they have. Despite all adversities, continuing to hang in, as I believe we are witnessing the end of the American experiment in democracy. As far as America's standing on the world court, I believe it's been greatly compromised. A lot of it had to do with the election of Donald Trump, and a lot of it has to do with what's internally happening in the country now. You can look at several metrics. There's been declines in education. There's been declines in the gross national product. There's been declines in technical leadership. They're trying to wave the focus on Russia. Putin is an old KGB boss. He's an old player. And the reason why Russia fell wasn't so much what the United States was doing to it, was the fact that the Afghanistan war crippled its military, and Russia was and has been a corrupt country. I was in country in Europe during the decline of the Russian Empire, and it's a corrupt country. There were several corrupt oligarchs. Corruption ran through the Soviet Party. Corruption ran through the Communist Party, and eventually it caused implosion. Same thing that's happening here. Corrupt politicians, the double talk, misrepresentation of the facts, and the internal character of the country began to decline. And Putin was the result, just like Trump was the result of our decline. Putin kills people. It goes without saying. He poisoned people. He poisoned one person with radioactive material. And when confronted, like most criminal organizations, they pointed other criminal organizations outside of themselves. But in retrospect and in fact, the organization is related to the government. Same thing as the United States. So I draw a lot of comparison between the decline of the Union of Soviet Socialist Republic and what I believe to be the impending decline of the United States. There's corruption. There's misguided leadership. There's leadership without character. There's double talk and blatant lies. And there are madmen at the helm. So that's where America stands as far as my view in the world. As far as what's going on in the world, China is taking the leadership. The Pacific Rim, China, Japan, Korea. One thing they do know how to do is work together. Even though they may have different political ideologies and philosophies, when it comes to the corporate market, if you look at it, if you study it, as far as like, for example, I've took classes about Fuji Tech, and Fuji Tech shares the same technology that Mitsubishi does. And Mitsubishi shares the same technology that Samsung does. And they have a tendency, as far as for the corporate world, to do that. They share technologies. The inverter technology that is used in some modern air conditioning systems was developed by Mitsubishi, and they shared across the Pacific Rim throughout products. They don't have a problem with working together on that aspect. And they look at the world globally. They don't look at the world from nationalist perspectives as America does and as we as Americans do. They look at it as a global endeavor and and that's why the Belt Road Initiative by Ping has taken off. They build infrastructure in foreign countries. They allow the countries to run their own governments. They don't interfere to a certain extent with local politics. They basically concentrate on extracting resources from your country and giving you what you want. And that's how it's done. So I think America's about to go on the decline. We might have a spike due to the releasing of the pandemic restrictions. But as most economists, Richard Wolff says, and I believe, this spike is going to be false and we're going to feel the brunt of the economic shutdown. We're going to feel the brunt of the housing and mortgage crisis. We're going to feel the brunt of the student loan crisis. We're going to feel the implosion of this economy. And the prevailing government doesn't seem to be taking any steps to circumvent the obvious decline. So, as I said yesterday, look to the east and learn Chinese, because you might need it.
Look to the east and learn Chinese, because that's the future.
It might be. Hey, it's coming. Every empire has its time. From the Roman Empire with the 500-year Pax Romana to the decline to the Byzantine Empire to the Ataturks and America's time is coming. I mean, you know, you can see the handwriting on the wall. We've allowed ourselves to be lied to by our leadership for too long. And they had no consequences to the point now where is they lie like they breathe and they fear no consequences. The like Benjamin Franklin said, the price of freedom is eternal vigilance. And we fell asleep at the wheel. Now we have politicians that say one thing and do another without any regard for anything, with no character, with men, T.S. Eliot poem, men without chest. Women without chest. They'll be one way one day and another way the next, without any real moral turpitude. And you can't run anything like that. You can't have a family like that. You can't run a business like that. And you can't run a country like that.
Is Biden, in your view, the big hope that things will turn around? He's not as crazy as Trump, allegedly. And therefore, will he be the one to return the country and return the people of the country to the point of great faith in the nation?
Biden is a weak old man. He's an old politician. And in his best day, he was the king of compromise. He signed the bankruptcy laws. He says one thing, he does another. He darts off. He lies consistently, from meeting with Nelson Mandela to participating in the Selma March. I mean, you know, the man, Helen Caldicott said it best. The record, the record, the record. I can't predict what you're going to do because I'm not a psychic. All I can do, based on your past performance, is extrapolate what you'll do in the future. Biden's past performance, he's a piss-poor moderate at best. He's a status quo maintainer, and that's what he's doing now. He sold all these big dreams when he was coming as far as campaigning, and before 100 days was out, he compromised on more than half of what his platform was, like I said yesterday. And when you do that, they're showing me you've got no real stomach for the fight. He can't even appear on the same stage with Vladimir Putin. They got to do separate. Come on, that look alone, that sends off a weakness metric. Even Crazy Man could be on the same stage with this dude. You can't. You're that weak. Doesn't bode well.
Well, it was supposed to indicate a not so subtle form of contempt. You know, that you, Mr. Putin, you do not yet qualify to be on the same stage with me. I am superior to you. The United States is still superior to Russia.
That is a juvenile perspective on diplomacy.
Yes,
Diplomacy 101. The enemy of my enemy is my friend. Politics makes strange bedfellows. The art of politics is compromise and dealing. You don't resign anybody to a negative or a weaker position unless you have the power to back it up. And Biden don't. He can't even get his own party to do what he wants to do. So how are you going to get somebody like Putin, who's KGB trained, who's Spetsnaz served, who himself is little more than a political mafioso in the Russian oligarchy government? You think you're going to play with him? He poisons people. Come on, and he denies it. No, come on. I mean, Biden is out of his league. This is if it wasn't so sad, it'd be funny.
Will you expect, or do you expect, that this meeting and this détente being attempted now will also cause a ripple effect in the nations of the world, picking sides again and lining themselves up with either the Russians or Americans? Is that going to happen again?
I'm telling you, it's already happening. I mean, nations of the world are not, from my humble perspective, people are sleeping on China. They're sleeping on the Asian dragon. They're sleeping on the Pacific Rim. If you look at business, if you look at how business and technology is going, China, Japan, Korea, they hold the patents on so many items that we use, from cell phones to air conditioners to computers. They hold the patents that build these things. They hold the manufacturing that build these things, the iPhone, Android. That's where the world is going. National politics and nationalism is a thing of the past. The future is about money and who can best use the dwindling resources on this planet to make a profit. And China, Japan, the Pacific Rim, they stand at the head of that. They stand at the head of mobilization for manufacturing. They stand at the head of mobilization for people moving and controlling their economies. And America don't stand a chance. We don't have it anymore. We're subservient to China. China owns more of America than America do. I ain't worried about Russia. Russia's full of criminals. They got their own problems they trying to deal with. Putin's doing duck and cover. Shoot.
Well, you make that's a very strong point, and it happens, I think, to be true, that the shift, the political and economic shift, has already occurred, and it is now in even further development, so that there will be a shutout pretty soon. The United States will not be able to compete. The nations of the world are going to go or align themselves with countries they see as allied with them or that they can benefit from. I don't see how the United States can compete with this burgeoning part of the world where there's so much commerce going on, so much money being made, so much advances in science and technology. And they're trying, even though it, you know, we get reports to the contrary all the time, I think they're trying their best to rebuild or to build up their economies to some degree, because it just was unattended for so long. They got lazy and they got distracted. They did not do what they were supposed to do. They couldn't generate the kinds of money that they have since been able to do. So now they are well positioned to rebuild their various countries and form new alliances that increase their political or global power politically.
Oh, yeah. Well, like I said, the president thing is providing the infrastructure to the world. The Belt and Road Initiative has been going on for the past 15 years. And China, just like the China Long March program under Mao Zedong, those 1 billion people can't be wrong. And when they put their mind to something, they get it done. That's just facts. They get it done, and that's what they're doing. They built infrastructure. They created and modified over 800 ports. They've got transcontinental rail across China. Over 8,000 miles of train tracks, technology. Anytime you wanted to build something in China, they let you build it, but you couldn't patent your idea. You couldn't lock them out of the technology, and they duplicated it. So, I mean, it's a new world, and America is at the back door. And
We have to leave it there, because we're out of time. Thank you all for calling and contributing today. Let's meet up again tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.